So, Brad, I was thinking about moving my podcasting closet in my house today from the closet off of my studio to the space under our stair, the sort of Harry Potter space under our stairway, you know?
Now, is that where you had a closet when I was over there? I hung all my stuff in there?
No, that was just a hallway closet, but there's a little like, you know, it's not big. It's just, you could barely stand up, but you could sit down comfortably in there.
Yeah.
And I started to think, well, wait a minute. When I close the door on this Harry Potter closet, where am I going to get oxygen from as I'm podcasting? And then it occurred to me, where do I get oxygen now? I'm in a closet with the door closed and sound dampening moving blankets over the door. I'm realizing there must be a reason why I get a little more cuckoo bananas towards the end of every episode. It's because I'm oxygen deprived.
Yeah, and now that it's on your mind, it's even going to be worse. The placebo effect is just going to be completely off the charts today.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to be the whole time, I'm going to be like flop sweating going, am I all right? Am I breathing? Am I getting the oxygen I need?
Am I going to pass out? What's going on over here?
So if you see me start to gently lull from side to side over the camera as we podcast, maybe suggest I crack the door from time to time. And on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics
and making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his pal, Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's hour of comics advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. We have an absolutely massive show. We're going to do an entire hour, I think, on the wherewithals and the who-withals of Substack moving into comics. Brad's eyes went up really big when I said wherewithals and who-withals. He did not like that phrase. But before we get started on all of that, I want to give a huge shout-out and thank you to our sponsors for this episode, the good folks at Wacom at WACOM.com, the makers of the Wacom One.
Where it's very interesting that Substack is just now moving into comics, Wacom has been involved with comics since the very beginning of their business. They've always been very conscious of the comics community, and their tablets are perfect for pro-level comics creation. As always, we remind you, if you're interested in trying one of these tablets out, you couldn't do better than the Wacom One. It's got a fantastic price point. It delivers pro-quality results. And if you're just thinking about getting started in digital media, this is their one for you to choose.
I still remember, speaking of starting way back in comics with Wacom, I remember almost 20 years ago, a hotel room off of San Diego Comic-Con, and Scott Kurtz showing Chris Straub, you and myself, his first Wacom, and all four of us just drooling over it. Like, what is this technology? We're drawing with light. We're drawing with pixels. This is amazing.
Like showing wizards. Fire to a caveman. It was that significant.
Exactly. So we give a huge shout out and a thank you to our friends Wacom at WACOM.com, makers of the Wacom One. And Bradley Jade, bring us into the show for this week. What are we talking about with Substack? What's been going on?
Oh, my gosh. Well, this is very interesting. Substack is, at its heart, an email newsletter delivery system. It's, of course, a little bit more than that because they also have included monetization into that. So now, not only are you delivering an email newsletter, but you can monetize it. You can have some subscriber-only content, and that has been the thing that has put them on the map. Also, they're actually paying some people to start their Substack subscriptions, and they're paying some of these creators up front. Okay, and they're actually paying pretty good amounts of money. We're going to get into that in a little bit. But as they, as I'm sure you found out by now, they started to push into comics, and a number of top level Marvel artists and writers have announced that they're going to start some creator-owned properties and launch them on Substack.
Absolutely. And so Substack is only a few years old. They have about, 82, $83 million in VC money. And as Brad said, though, the technology that they are using, the platform that they're building, The thing that I find most interesting, Brad, is none of that is necessarily new. None of it is groundbreaking. Right. It is not a Twitter. It is not an Instagram. It is not even a Facebook. It is a it is really just the melding of blogging plus MailChimp plus a little bit of Patreon magic thrown into it. And it's interesting that they are spinning it as some revolutionary thing. It's kind of a version of what we've seen 10, 15 years now. But anyway, all that being aside. Substack currently has about 500,000 users, right? And that's it. That's an incredible growth because they only had about 250,000 as of about a year ago. So they've doubled their user base. Now, keep that in mind, though, contrast that against Patreon, Brad, which has, what, 6 million, I believe?
6 million. The last we checked, those were 2021 numbers. 6 million users for Patreon.
Right. So just keep that in mind as we talk that Patreon is still the 800-pound gorilla in this conversation. Right. In terms of they're 12 times the size of Substack. Now, Substack has raised, as I said, they raised $83 million. And always keep in mind with a moment in a business like this that they're not looking to make a profit per se, Substack, I mean. Mm-hmm. What they're looking to do is to bring the company public to make their venture capitalist money, which involves giving the market the impression that they are a viable business with the potential for a lot of future profits. So, yes, it would be great to show a couple quarters of profit if they could. I'm not sure it would be nice. But what they're really trying to do is bring this to market. So keep that in mind that that's what stage this business is at, because that's going to inform this whole conversation. So about, I don't know, Brad, about a year ago, 6 months ago, maybe it was a year ago, towards the beginning of the pandemic, Substack started approaching journalists, historians, and writers. And basically saying, hey, would you like to leave the Washington Post or leave the New York Times as a columnist? Here's $100,000 for a year. It's a grant, a Substack Pro grant. We'll give you an upfront grant of $100,000. All you got to do is write for us. And you get to own all the copyright. You get to own all your articles or all your essays that you write that are all still yours to publish later if you want. But here's $100,000. And it made a big splash, at least in the columnists that I read at the New York Times and the Washington Post, because people were like, what is this? What's happening? Where's this money coming from? Right. And so so they basically what they were doing, though, Brad, and maybe this is worth you talking about, is they were trying to buy an audience. Right.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. In other words, this goes back to a question that we get on the show every couple of months, and that is, why do you use Patreon? Why not use one of their competitors? And there's a lot of Patreon clones, and people are like, why not use Patreon's clones? And the answer that we always deliver is because Patreon has something that's very enviable in the marketplace. They've got 6 million people who already have Patreon accounts.
Right.
As you might imagine, if you're pitching Patreon to a reader, the first hurdle you've got to get them to climb is to set up a Patreon account.
Right.
Well, if you've got 6 million users who already have accounts, now all they've got to do is bink, hit a button, and now they are your Patreon backer, right?
Right.
So building that audience, building that user base that can be monetized a number of different ways. Because I don't know what your experience has been, Dave, but once I backed one person on Patreon, I started backing two, and then I backed three, and then I got more than I could count.
I was literally just going to say that within minutes of me putting in my credit card, and that's the key moment, is putting in your credit card. Once a company has your credit card in their system, your use of that system expands exponentially. I did the same thing, Brad. I backed four, five, six creators, bang, 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 right in a row as soon as I get in. In fact, I had to tell myself, now, hold on, David, bring it down a notch. You can't support the whole world.
Let's not get nuts.
Exactly,
Let's not pretend as we're oxygen deprived over here with my with the Patreon account. And so what they did, Dave, was what Substack is doing is smart. In other words, they're reaching out to a lot of people with large audiences and journalists who in turn talk about this at their jobs in newspapers. They're drumming up an awful lot of interest in this. And there are people that have large reaches already, like a Washington Post columnist already has a lot of people that are following that columnist and are going to be primed to follow them over to Substack. It's a variation of what we always say. First comes the crowd, then comes the funding. Right. So they're being very smart, and it's worth their money to pay $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 to some of these big fishes to get them to come over to Substack. Because if they bring over enough users with them, that's really what Substack is buying. They're not buying content. They're buying users.
Right. And that's kind of a key distinction to make with a company like this, because people are like, oh, they're snapping up talent. And I always want to say they're not necessarily snapping up talent. What they're doing is, yes, they're not paying for you as a talented creator. They're paying for you as a talented creator that has built up an audience. It's the audience they want. The fact that you're talented is perfectly lovely, and I'm sure the VC people would pat you on the back and go, "Hey, you're a great human being." But what they really want are the 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 people that you're going to bring them. That's, by the way, that's not necessarily nefarious. That's just smart business. They're basically saying, we're going to take our ad budget, and instead of spending a couple million dollars on ad buys, we're going to spend a couple million dollars just giving out grants to people that will bring us an audience of 50,000 people here, 150,000 people there, right? And so you saw, and Brad rightly points out, it was really brilliant of them to start with journalists, because no one likes navel-gazing about the state of their industry and writing up things more than journalists do. So you suddenly got a spate of articles about a year ago from journalists about journalists joining Substack.
And you won't find a group of people who are as eager, or shall we say motivated, to try something new because their industry is dying. Than journalists. Journalists are like, "What, you got something you got one to try? I'll jump out that window for you. You know, I'll do anything. Just show me the money." And they chose wisely.
So you say I can make a living selling plasma, eh? All right, I'm in. So, and what's interesting in both of these cases, both with journalism and with bloggers and columnists, and now with comic book creators, Substack is wisely going to traditional media platforms, which are admittedly stumbling. Everybody in the industry knows that they are kind of coughing and on their last days on their sickbed. And so both with newspaper journalists and with comic book creators, someone comes to them and says, "Hey, here's $100,000. Here's $150,000. You can own everything you create for us. Just come basically work for Substack," quote unquote. And you'll see a journalist, you know, shiv their coworker and run out the door. You'll see a comic book creator like, "See you later, DC. I've got better places to be." And so that Substack is very smart in catching sort of the zeitgeist of where the mood is for those creators, those writers, those journalists. And so, frankly, from Substack's perspective, I think this is brilliant. I think this is very smart. It's not dissimilar, Brad, from what we've seen with Instagram or TikTok paying certain creators to just basically stay on the platform, keep doing stuff, bring your users to us, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we've seen other social media platforms do this. This is just feels like a bigger splash because they're making a more of a show of the fact that this is a nice big six-figure check. And here you go. It's all yours. Kind of no strings attached. Just come work on Substack.
Yeah, absolutely. So now let's take a look at Substack and what they're offering. Of course, I think part of the deal on it, to the best of my knowledge, on all of these offerings where they're saying we'll pay you upfront for your first year. After that, as far as I understand, they're not really paying. After that, it goes to a standard Substack contract where you basically earn what you have in terms of the user base that you've assembled. In other words, for the first year, they might get $100,000 from Substack up front. Year number two, 366 days later, then it's the same as you and me and anybody else on Patreon or any other crowdfunding setup. And that is, you get a portion of the subscriptions that you bring to the table. Now, am I reading this right? Substack charges $5 a month or $30 a year for access to a creator. And then they take, right off the top, Substack takes 10% of this subscription. And then there are credit card fees and other charges, like probably, I would imagine, if they're dealing with VAT taxes and stuff like that, all of that comes out after that. But Substack is taking 10% off the top. And then you also have credit card fees, et cetera, after that. Is that correct?
Right. And you and I would both know from years online that the credit card fees at best are in the high 3% and in the worst at mid to high 5%, depending on the fees.
I was going to say, I usually just back of the envelope, just call it a straight 5%
yeah.
for me.
I mean, listen, you're not wrong. I was being generous yeah. when I was like, yeah,
yeah.
All the stars have to align for it to be in the threes. Anyway, so you're looking at 15% off the top, which is what Brad's point was. And let's compare that again to Patreon, which is roughly about 5% and 5%, 5% for Patreon, 5% for credit card fees and the yeah. like. And yeah. so you're already paying 5% more for Substack. Okay, but that's fine. You're still happy because you've just been handed $100,000. But I think Brad made the most interesting point here, which is we really need to talk about 365 days plus one for these yes. creators, because that 366th day is the second most interesting day in their career on Substack. The first one is yes. when they signed that contract. We're like, oh boy, look at me. I got $150,000. The right. next most interesting day is, oh shit, I don't have $150,000, right? Because yeah. then here's what happens. During that first year, Substack keeps all the subscription money, more than fair. They're saying, we're mm-hmm. paying you up front. We're going to keep all the first year subscription money. It's a growing year anyway. Substack knows you're only going to make $1,000 that first year anyway. So they don't right. care. They've already taken that as a cost of doing business with you. But from the 366th day on your own with Substack, right? They have already squeezed all the juice out of that lemon that they can get in terms of bringing your audience to their platform. They're not going to get more out of you by saying, here's a second year grant for you to stick around. Your job now is to basically be a web cartoonist, is to do exactly yes. what we do.
Yes. Well, this brings up two really interesting points. I had somebody that I know, an acquaintance that I know through TikTok, DM me. And one of the things he said was, Brad, do you think this is going to catch on with independent cartoonists? And I said, my friend, this is what we've been doing for the last 20 plus years. It's a new app. It's a new name. But the engine behind what's making this work, this is what we've been doing. This is what we always done in independent comics and independent creators in right. general. This is what we've done. Catch on. What's catching on is these people who have been in traditional publishing are catching on to the fact that this sort of thing is possible.
Right.
And there's a lot of that. What they're going to catch on to on that 366th day is that there's a lot of pitfalls as well. And they need to really start paying attention, because that brings me to my next point. And I know you're completely on the same page here. One of the people, and I'm not going to call them out by name because there's no reason to call this person out by name, but one of the people that took the Substack deal from Marvel Comics then went to Twitter and said, this is goodbye. I'm not doing Twitter anymore. I've always hated social media. I'm paraphrasing here, but he said basically goodbye Twitter, and said, I think social media is terrible, which by the way, I get that. And then he went on to say that the only stuff he's going to do on his Twitter account is let people know that he's updated Substack, maybe a retweet here and there. He's got a second account. It's going to continue to be active with news about the latest releases, but he's going to be paying someone else to run that page, and it's going to be fully promotional. He goes on to say that the newsletter is going to be my only regular mode of direct content with the internet. And Dave Kellett, I'd like to invite you to tell us why that's a horrible idea.
That is the single dumbest thing you can do in a situation like this. Mm-hmm. First of all, you've just been given $150,000. Great. Good for you. No one in the world begrudges you yes. being handed that check or taking that check, right? That's great.
Yes.
Awesome. The dumbest thing you can do is say, well, I'm done with social media forever. I'm done with promotion forever. Because yes. for that exact reason that we just talked about, that 366th day is coming faster than you think.
Yes.
Here is the truth about all life online. At any yeah. given month, any given week, I am losing 5 to 10% of my readership. So in that same month, I want to be gaining 6 to 11% new readers, bringing them in, you know, that kind of thing. Worst case scenario, I just want a straight replacement. Like I lose 3 readers, I gain 3 readers, right?
Sure.
But the only way that happens, it doesn't happen as a bubble. I have to be out basically promoting and giving away free comics on social media, on Twitter, on Instagram, on TikTok, on the like. Keep going, Brad. Yes.
More than just promoting. You've got to be publishing. You've got to be doing community building. I say this still to this day. There's a lot in the, at this point in time, there is a lot in that original How to Make Webcomics book that is dated. Obviously, it was written in 2007. Dave's chapter on community building remains one of the best treatises on this dynamic that you can find anywhere. What Dave is going to forget about community building in the next year is more than I'm going to learn about it in the next 10 years. Read that chapter and it'll tell you. You need to be not only promoting, you need to be reaching out. You need to be responding. You need to be active on social media. Yes, we've spent a lot of time saying the algorithm stinks. We've spent a lot of time saying we're in late stages social media. All of that stuff remains the true, but it doesn't mean that you have the luxury to stop at this point. You gotta keep going, because on that 366th day, the Robert Koo axiom comes in. And remember, that's when Robert Koo said to me, I said, hey, I think I should be doing a lot better. I think I should be making more money. I think I should have more readers. And Koo said, you have exactly what you've earned. Yeah. Ouch.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But he was absolutely right. And on that 366th day, each of these people who have started comics on Substack will have what they've earned. And then they'll have to make a living on it.
Right. And then so just to step back to give everyone the bigger picture, what I imagine some of these writers and cartoonists are going and comics creators are going to do on Substack is they've just been lured away from Marvel or DC or maybe even Image, mostly Marvel and DC. And what they're thinking in their mind is, great, I've been given $100,000. I'm going to hire an artist. I'll hire a letterer. I'll hire a colorist if they're a writer, right? And we're going to make a book. And then somewhere around 9 months, they're going to go to Image with that book, Brad. And they're going to say, look, I've done a whole trade on Substack. And then they'll sell it to Image, right? That, I think, would be the best possible way you could play this. You have a book at the end of it, you're building your social media, and you're directing all your audience to Substack. That would be the way, if I was a DC or Marvel person, I would play it, right? So that to try to build a career, a repeatable career on Substack, is you have the subscriptions paying for the story being told, and then you bring that book to Image at the end of it, or even better, you self-publish it. But
that's what I was waiting to jump in. I was like, there is a better way than taking it to Image, but I see where you're going.
You and I know, though, that a 65-year-old writer or a 55-year-old writer from Marvel who's worked at Marvel for 20 years, they are not going to self-publish. You and I know this. They're going to go to Image because there is a little bit of an ego and also a little bit of scaredness in doing it on your own. So you know they're going to go to Image. But anyway, yes, the better thing would have been to kickstart it at the end. But all that being said, though, the dumbest thing you can do is to walk away from social media and say, I'm done with that. If anything, you've got to double down on it now, because here's the problem and here is the dirty little thing that they're all going to wake up to. Having left Marvel and DC, they have basically built an audience of 100,000, 500,000, let's say 1 million people through their Marvel or DC, like working for, I don't know, Batman, right? But the problem now is they've got to convince all those people, who many of whom they don't have a direct line of communication to say, hey, you liked me writing Batman, right? Hey, come follow me over on Substack and pay $5 a month or $30 a year. First of all, they might not have, like I said, a direct Twitter or Instagram feed to reach those people, right? So they've got to hope that the grapevine gets to those people. Secondly, they've got to hope that those people weren't just reading them because they liked Batman, that they liked, in fact, their specific take on Batman so much that they're like, I would like to see more from this writer. That's a different proposition, I think.
Yep. That goes back to that conversation we've had on this show a number of times. Where do you want to build your castle, right? And this is going to be now the transition these folks have got to make. They've built their castle on IP, creative property that they don't own. Now, having built a name for themselves as doing Batman, Spider-Man, etc., now, like Dave just said, they've got to convince people that they can do this character that nobody's heard of and do it just as compellingly. That's by the way, you'd think that that's easier than it is. It's not. I've stood right by some people, friends of mine, that were in this situation. I've stood there next to them at their booth as person after person comes up and says, "Oh, I loved you doing," and again, I'll just make something up, Spider-Man's, because we were just talking about, "I loved when you did Spider-Man. That was so great." And he says, "Yeah, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm doing this creator-owned thing." Again, just making stuff up. It's called Arachnid Boy. And by the way, Dave, it's the same exact thing. It is the same humor. It's the same beautiful drawing. It's the same storytelling. It's the same everything. And they're like, "Yeah, well, I don't want an Arachnid Boy. When are you going to do Spider-Man again? I want to buy a Spider-Man book." Yeah. And the guy says, "Yeah, but this basically is a Spider-Man book. It's just Arachnid Boy. Buy the book." They don't want to buy the book. They want Spider-Man. That's what each of these people are going to have to. And by the way, for better or for worse, I'm not saying that it's a good thing that this is happening. I'm not saying it's a bad thing that this is happening, but it definitely is going to be a thing. They've got to transition those readers over to creator-owned now, and they're going to need social media to do it. This is no time to step away. This is the time to step it up.
And honestly, like I said, it's going to be a rude awakening for some of them. For some, I see absolutely smooth sailing. Like Scotty Young, who I love, he's gonna land with this parachute with no problem at all. He's great on social media. He's built his audience. His audience follows him wherever he goes. He's gonna do great. Whatever he produces on the Substack contract, he's then gonna bring back to Image, and bada bing, bada bang, he's gonna continue on with his career. There are some people who have never worked outside of Marvel or DC, and I think it's going to be painful for them, Brad, to do this, you know. And by the way, I'm not saying this in any sort of malevolent way. I want them to succeed. I'm just saying I think it's going to be a rude awakening, and I hope for the best that they don't walk away from social media, that they don't think that there's going to be a second grant from Substack for year two. The Substack is getting everything they can get out of you in year one. In fact, on day one, after that, it's like driving a new car off the lot. As soon as you, a day after you join Substack, you immediately start to decrease in value to Substack because that your first push to your readers has already gone out. Now, Brad, what do you think? Let's switch gears for a second, because this is an interesting counterpoint. The speed and the energy with which writers will abandon working on the top tier titles in comics, right?
Yes.
You and I agree some of these names are working on the top tier comics, whether Batman, whether it's this or that, doesn't matter. Like the top five kind of comic books on shelves. What does that say to you, Brad, about the state of the industry and what we've been saying for the last couple of years about what's about to happen?
Well, in my opinion, it's a clear indication that publishing, traditional print publishing, and particularly comics publishing is dying, right? All of these places that you hear young people saying, "Oh, one day I want to be a Marvel artist. I want to be a DC artist." The people who have those jobs are jumping at this opportunity, and they know that it's, I mean, we've said, you know, 366 days, we've said that a few times now. They know at some level, they might not understand it completely, but they know that on the 366th day, the rubber meets the road. They know that, they understand that, and they're still willing to make this jump.
Yes.
They still want to get the hell
Holy
out.
Holy shit, that's a really good point.
And comfortable people, by the way, I understand newspaper journalists doing this. I get newspaper journalists doing this. Comics writers and comics artists at the top levels, that's a surprise. That tells you that those people are not comfortable people.
Right. It's basically without saying it, they're basically saying their income, their income security is not anything what we would hope for them at this point in their career. Right. They are at the top of their game in their industry. Right. It's like imagine if they had worked their way into the NBA and are now on a championship team. And then someone says, hey, if you leave that championship team, I'll give you a sandwich. And they're like, holy shit, I'll leave right now. I'm out the door. Like you're basically getting a glimpse with the Substack deal. All is not well in the world of traditional comic books. And this is a very clear glimpse that if you dangle the right carrot, people are like, I'm out of here. I've been looking for you. And by the way, this is a perfect parachute for them to get out safely for a year. You kind of couldn't imagine a better way to try to transition towards an indie career than saying you have 12 months to build an independent career.
Yeah.
Here's $100,000. Here's $150,000. You have 12 months. You're a smart person. You're a good writer. You already have an audience. You just got to reach them in a better way. Can you do it? That's probably, Brad, the best golden parachute out of a dying industry you could get, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and now they're going to have to make it work.
Now they have to make it work.
It's almost like you're working. You finally achieved a spot on the Harlem Globetrotters and somebody's offering you a spot on the Washington Generals. And you're like, you know what? I'll take it.
Does it come with $100,000? I'll take it. Yeah.
That's right.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics.
So, Brad, switching gears for a second, this is just a quick little topic aside. Is this move a good move for these comic creators' readers? Not the publishing, not Substack, not the creators themselves. Is this a good move for their readers?
Man, that's a great question. I don't know that it's a good move. I think it's, I don't know. I'm stumped. I don't know the answer to this question. Is it a good move? It depends on. So what's going to have to happen is they themselves as readers are going to have to open themselves up to reading a Batman writer who's writing something that's not Batman. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you can open yourself up to that, you could discover that you like a whole lot of things that isn't Batman. The question is,
a whole journey of self-discovery that's not Batman. I love that we're describing like a man-child who's never read. I've never read anything other than Batman. The look on your face was amazing. I mean, yes, you're right. Turns out I like more things than Batman. There's more things in the world.
But I don't know if it's, what do you think about that? I don't know how to answer that question. Is it going to be good for readers?
So I'm actually, I'm glad you turned it around because I think I'm like you. I am neutral on the topic because I think like your spidey sense is telling you, a lot of people are reading the Batman writer, not because he's the Batman writer, but because it's Batman, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But the flip side of that is like I've already spoken about Scotty Young, so I'll just keep going on Scotty.
Yeah.
I think Scotty's a genius. I think his art style is great. I think he cultivates his audience in a very specific way and he's very good at it. I think he'll do fine and his audience will love it. And a percentage of him will follow him onto Substack. Most will continue to follow him on Twitter and the other thing. That's fine. I'm not sure of these people who don't have a social media presence. And who haven't ever, or not ever, but haven't in the last 10 to 20 years worked on an IP property that's not firmly established. I don't know if people are going to go, oh, you're leaving, I don't know, I'm making one up, Iron Man and you're going to go do a story, a coming of age story in Midwest Ohio.
Yeah.
I don't know that that reader immediately goes, I'm all in. I'm ready to go. Yeah. I liked yeah. Iron Man, but I'm also ready to learn about my feelings when I was 14. You know, that kind of thing.
I think having now that I've heard you talk for a little bit, I will say this. I think it's going to be a little bit easier for artists than it's going to be for writers. I think an artist can bring a certain style, a certain visual acumen, and can transition somebody from Batman to a different character. I think it's going to be different for writers.
And you know what? And maybe, Brad, you hit on something that I didn't think of. Maybe that's why intuitively I was saying it's easier for Scotty Young than it is for a writer who, frankly, and I say this as 50% a writer, it is a little easier to get lost in the crowd mentally as a writer than it is as an artist, I think, in a visual medium like the internet. Anyway, so let's move on to the next topic, Brad. What do you think happens? Separate from 365 days plus one.
Yeah.
An interesting topic of conversation is where do we see most of these creators 2 years out, 3 years out, 4 years out after they sign this Substack contract?
Ooh, I am not optimistic. I am not optimistic. I think there's going to be one or two of them that that catch on very quickly to what's going on here and how they need to take an active role in their careers, an active role in their own promotion, in their outreach, using social media, doing what they need to do to build those numbers. I think some of them are going to catch on. I think many of them are going to be right back where they started. And either working for what's left of Marvel and DC print publishing at that point, or finding other jobs in other corporate settings. I'm not optimistic. I think that's not like smarmy or these guys can't catch on. We've been doing this for 20 years plus, and we've been swimming in those waters very much so.
Right.
We're going to take somebody who has walked a completely different path and throw that person into the deep end and then say, well, you literally sink or swim. And when you throw somebody into the deep end and say sink or swim, the fact of the matter is some of them are going to swim and others are going to sink. And I think we're going to see a few of those folks sink.
Right. And by the way, that's not like some egotistical thing Brad is saying about how good we are, because if you took Brad and I and suddenly threw us into the waters of Marvel and DC, we would not know how to sink or swim in their specific pitch process or in their specific development process or how to take over a title. All we're saying is it's what they know. They know that process. And now we're asking them to suddenly be independent, web-minded creators. And it's very different, very hard to do. So, Brad, here's where I come down on this. I think 3 years out from now, like you, 10 to 20% of them will take to this like a duck to water. They'll be like, I get it. I see how I need to build my audience. And this title that I've created for Substack is taking off. People seem to love my coming of age story in Ohio. This is great. I'm doing good. All right. So I'm here to stay, basically. Right. I think about a third to half of them will, God, I hope they did not burn any bridges on their way out of Marvel and DC, because I think about a third to half of them will stumble back to whatever is left 2 to 3 years from now for print for Marvel and DC, right? I think that will happen. And then I think the remaining sort of third, my math is off here, but the remaining sort of third will either find their way into TV writing, novel writing, or some other medium where they might be able to find expression. And by the way, both Brad and I, with all good wishes, want the best for them in that 3 year period. We're not hoping. I'm just saying, like, I don't see this going. This is not the be all end all of their career, where they go to Substack and now they're made for life. It's not like MGM, you know, tapping you on the shoulder in 1920 and saying you're going to be a movie star, kid, and then you're made for the next 30 years. This is a 1 year deal, and I think as long as everybody goes into this with eyes wide open about the fact that it's a 1 year deal, and then it's back to scraping and working the following year, I think they'll be okay. Yeah. But I do think, now, separate to that, Brad, what do you think are the painful wake-up calls that are awaiting these creators on day 365 plus one, for example?
Well, I think there's going to be a certain amount of them who, when on the day number 366, they look and they don't have half of the subscribers that they thought they would, or they have a lot of subscribers, and it seemed like a very big number last year, But now that they're basing 100% of their income on that, and remember, Substack is taking 10% right off the top, and then the rest of the fees are being taken out. So it's a smaller chunk than they might be making, for example, on Patreon. They're going to find out that that number is smaller than they thought it was now that they're basing 100% of their income on it. And really, the other thing is, well, what if they go half and half? They're doing a little Substack, they're doing a little Marvel, they're doing a little this, they're doing a little that. If they try to split their energies, that's going to be a pitfall. This is the point. Now that you've got that 365 days, they've got to go all in on this so that when they hit that 366th day, they're going full bore and there's no stopping them. I don't know how many of them are going to do that. And it's going to be a real challenge for them to do that. What's your thoughts there? What am I missing?
No, I think you hit it exactly right. I think it's going to be a painful wake up call for the people that have not spent the last 5 to 10 years cultivating their own line of communication to their own readers.
Yeah.
About how hard it is to reach people. And as an example, I have spent 20 years building a community online. And yet I just got off my Kickstarter where I'm exhausted and telling Brad, yes, it was so hard to reach people that actively love my work. It's so hard to reach them.
We talked about that last show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was so hard to reach them and so hard to motivate them. And yet I love them. They love me. And ostensibly all the lines of communication are established. Right. So how much harder is it for these people who have not established these lines of communication on Twitter or on a blog or Tumblr or whatever the hell you want to call it? Like, they don't have those existing. So they have to start that from scratch. Never mind 20 years of communicating with them, start from scratch and then get them to motivated to buy the book or back the Kickstarter or jump in on Patreon or jump in on the Substack. It's hard. It's hard to do.
And here's what they're going to this is going to be the brick wall that some of them hit. Okay. So what you just said was eye-opening to me because it just brought something into clear focus. What we've been doing, we've been using what we always colloquially call the webcomics business model, right?
Right.
Where you build an audience by presenting your comics mainly for free,
right?
On a website or on social media. Back in the day, it was on an ad-supported website. Now that's changed a little bit to something that's on a truly free website, but it doesn't matter. You were building your audience by making it very, very easy for somebody to read your stuff and to fall in love with your stuff to this extent that they wanted to become active with your stuff.
Right.
You understand that?
Yep.
And we've been doing that for 20 years, or we've been doing that for a long time. These folks are going to have to find a way to make that relationship happen very, very quickly, because the mistake that many of them are going to make is they're going to put all of the stuff at a subscription level behind a paywall, right? But nobody's going to have any time to fall in love with it. Nobody's going to have time to read it and decide if they like it. And remember, these people love this artist because they did the Fantastic Four. They don't know whether they're going to like this new thing, but they're not going to be able to find out, because if they're going to make the mistake I think they're going to make, it's all going to be behind the paywall. No one's going to be able to have a chance to fall in love with it. Do you see the problem? Do you see the problem that's happening here?
And for clarity's sake, Substack allows you to make things public, allows you to make things private. But what Brad's saying is they are going to err on the side of making too much stuff private because they think people are paying for the subscription. It has to be private. And the only way around that is to also have a big enough body of work such that you can keep 80% behind the paywall, worst case scenario, but share 20% enticement. We've talked about that before. But they're starting from scratch. So even that is hard, right? They would basically have to produce twice as much in order to keep some behind the paywall and some public. It's a hard road to walk. So I agree with you on that, Brad. I really do.
And then again, if they're doing all of this through Substack, that's a very limited bubble, right? In other words, if they also need some of that public facing stuff that they're putting out on Substack also needs to be on a website. It also needs to be on social media. It needs to be propagated as far and wide as they can.
Right.
Because they need to start doing what you and I have done for a long time, building that wide audience base and then driving them towards crowdfunding. If they're doing everything on Substack, which is a mistake, they're going to have a real problem on that 366th day.
And then let's just talk emotionally. You have to adjust the fact that you now have to talk about you and your work all the time. not all the time. You guys know Brad always has the five C's of social media. Brad, what are they? The five C's?
The five C's. I know my five C's. I can totally do this. Commercial.
Oh, shit.
I want to say correspondence. Commercial content.
Curation. I'm going to help you.
Curation and kindness.
Kindness. The four C's. All right. There we go. What I'm getting at there is that they might not be used to talking all the time in a way that builds an audience for the point of and the purpose of building an audience, right? Previously, they might have been, I've got to work on my Marvel title. I'll tweet about my sandwich right now, right? Like that's, they're not used to the steps that are required to build an audience online using things like Brad's four C's of social media. Okay, so now, Brad, here's a more fun topic.
Yeah.
Would Brad Geiger, someone, one of the VC guys from Substack is a big reader of Evil Inc., loves Evil Inc. They email Brad Geiger tomorrow and they say $100,000, but you got to give up your Patreon and do Substack exclusively for a year. What do you do?
That's a hard pass for me. And it's for the reasons that I have already talked about at the top of the show. And that's because Patreon has 6 million users already signed up with Patreon accounts. Substack has a fraction of that. It's a non-starter for me. I don't leave Patreon. And it's the same reason that when people say, well, why don't you use one of the Patreon clones or one of the Patreon competitors? Because Patreon has 6 million users. And also because once you start doing a Patreon and a Ko-fi, right? Or a Patreon and this and that, it dilutes your messaging. Dave and I just got done saying how difficult it is to do targeted messaging. Now you're going to say, well, you can join us on Patreon, or you can do this thing on Ko-fi, and you can do this thing over here. It's tough enough to get a message out. Now you're going to dilute it?
Yeah. Anytime a brand name becomes the verb of the thing, it is so hard to go to the alternate of the verb. No one walks around the street going, oh, where's this information? I don't know. Did you Bing it? No one says that. They say, did you Google it? They say, did you jump in the jacuzzi? I'm thinking of another brand that's synonymous with the thing. What I'm getting at is, if you have to explain to your readers, hey, Ko-fi is Patreon, but a little different. The problem there is you're using Patreon. Like, you should be using Patreon. So, I'm with Brad on that.
Nobody says that they're going to Indiegogo their new book. They're going to kickstart their new book. They're not going to Indiegogo it.
Exactly. Thank you. That's a perfect example. Thank you.
Yeah.
So like you, I would not take a hundo to take drive off of Patreon. Because it took me, I don't know, 5 years to build up that audience on Patreon.
Right.
So stepping away from a year, I could probably on day 365 plus one, I could probably instantly regain 60% of that Patreon audience.
Yeah.
But it would be painful to reclaw back that last 40%. It would take me a few years, you know. I just know how things would go. So, however, Brad, they're also, Substack is starting to move into podcasts. If Substack came to you and I with a check for a hundo and said, would you take Comic Lab onto Substack? Brad, you'd see a cloud of dust as I ran towards Substack. I would run so fast with Comic Lab.
Maybe.
Maybe. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
You wouldn't split a hundo for a year on Substack with Comic Lab? Yeah, yes, we would.
I got to admit, $75,000 would be really tough to pass up.
$75,000? I like that you're assuming my math is that bad. Well, this seems fair. Brad sent me a check.
I'm hoping that the oxygen level has dropped just long enough that I can hold you to this agreement.
This seems fair to me. I love it. Thanks, Brad, for this check. I would move Comic Lab in a heartbeat because first of all, it's $100,000, and we don't have that yet, that type of audience yet for Comic Lab. So why not take it, right? I think it'd be a fun experiment for the show to take it to Substack, in the sense that we could talk about the process as we did it. But listen, yeah. It's not going to happen. The reason why they give you, like, to, as we said at the top of the show, the reason why they give you $100,000 is not because you're some sparkling, smiling young youth, right? It's because Comic Lab had an audience, existing audience of 500,000 listeners or 250,000 listeners. Comic Lab doesn't have that. We're not going to get a $100,000 check. So that raises the question, Brad, for the average listener who is on year one, two, three, four, five of their comics, should they go to Substack, Brad? Is this a good idea?
No, absolutely not. And again, this goes back to the Patreon clone conversation. It is not in their best interest to start on Substack. There's no reason. They should be doing email outreach, as we've been talking about on the show for the last several episodes. But they should be in the same way that you build your audience and then you monetize them. First comes the crowd, then comes the funding. They're much better off doing more of the traditional outreach, website, social media, email, directly ascending and so forth, and then monetizing on a place like Patreon. That's a much smarter play. Moving to Substack just because they see these big names. And that, by the way, that's another smaller reason they do that, because they say, well, Jonathan Hickman is on Substack. So somebody who's at a nobody level like me say, well, I'm going to be on the same platform as Jonathan Hickman.
Right.
You used to see people do that with, what was it called, Comic Sherpa and Go Comics. They used to say, I'm going to be on the same platform as Bloom County and Calvin and Hobbes. Well, yeah, and all those people are going to be looking for Bloom County and Calvin and Hobbes. They're not looking for you. It's the same kind of thing. This whole, I'm going to go there because the big name person is there. It's not a very smart move. You're so much smarter to stay with Patreon. Now, if things change and Substack balloons up and has a user base that you can fish from and you can really see something happening there, then yeah, maybe at that point, you're not going to lose anything by waiting off at this point and making a smart decision. It's not like, oh, you waited too late and now it's not there anymore. You can wait off a little bit, see what happens to Substack. To jump to Substack today, if you don't have a sizable audience and if you're not getting that Substack money up front, I think is a bad move.
I wholeheartedly agree. The way we've talked before about the way you want to build your career is many legs under the table, right? That means book publishing. It means Comic-Con appearances. It means Patreon. It means Kickstarter. It means eBay. It means commissions, right? You get where I'm going with this. It means a bunch of different income sources all holding up the table in case any one or two or three legs gets knocked out, like something unforeseen, like, oh, I don't know, a pandemic. So where your table stays up, even though a couple legs get knocked out of the table. Yeah. I get nervous with a platform like Substack, even more than Patreon, because the audience and the content is where the monetization is happening. It's different than Patreon, which is you go out and you give your content or you're sharing your content in multiple different platforms, and then people come to Patreon to support it. And there's a small but I think important difference there, which is that you can be more nimble if you have to change around your website, if you are doing more of this, more of that, more of that. Patreon still exists and is stable. If Substack, for example, starts to shit the bed, well, what do you do when that is both where you bring in your money and your audience and your content is? What I'm getting at is it's a version of it's too many legs under just Substack, and that's a problem. Brad's eyes got real wide when I used that Idahoism of shit the bed. Oh, I'm sorry about that, Brad.
But because you said what I've been trying to, you just said what I was thinking in a much more clearer way. In other words, I see so many people saying, well, you've been telling us to do email outreach. This is monetized email outreach. It's perfect, right? No, it's not. It's okay. In fact, it's better to keep those things separated, in my opinion, because it gives you a little bit more control. And also, for example, if you use MailChimp or what's the other one I was hearing about recently, ConvertKit, right? Yeah. It was another one of these email outreach places.
Or Tiny Letter or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Tiny Letter is a good example. Use that to its strength and then use Patreon to its strength. And then use Kickstarter to its strength. It doesn't have to be a one-stop shopping. In fact, the more extra things these platforms try to do, the less they do well, in my opinion.
Right. In a way, you have to look at Substack as presenting all these options under one roof because they're appealing to the artist that a little bit is saying, I don't want to be a business person. I just want to create, right? And so Substack says, don't worry. We'll go do all of that for you. It's all one button push. Now you're on Substack. You will take care of the money. We'll take care of your blogging. We'll take care of your mailing list, right? All that sort of stuff. And so for a certain kind of personality, that's appealing. But Brad and I are saying that way lies danger long-term in that you're not using different tools to their best purposes in a variety of safe ways. It's all under one roof. And if Substack goes under or has a problem, Brad, how long do you think, by the way, Substack will last?
Oh, I think it's going to last for years. I think it's going to be around for a long, long time. Long after they've gone through their venture capitalist money, they're going to pay out in these first several years or the first couple of years. They're going to pay out to these big names to get them on board. But that's probably not where they're going to make their money in the long run. The long run, they will convince a lot of middle of the pack people to come over for all the things that we just mentioned, right? Because of the people that want a push button solution, the people that want to follow the big names and so forth. They're going to make a lot of money on what we call the rat tail, right? If you put this on a graph, they have an
exponential curve down.
That are making a large amount of money. And then that graph slopes down and just goes on and on and on from all of these middle of the pack people. And that's where they're actually going to make most of their money. Because when you add up all the money from that rat tail, the money gets very big.
Right.
So they will be around for a long, long time. They're not going anywhere. They're going to be a part of the landscape for a long time because they will convince a lot of people that for all the reasons that we just said that they shouldn't, they're going to come over and they'll do a very good business off of it.
Yeah, like you, I think that $83 million of VC and angel funding, more VC funding probably, that can last them 3, 4, 5 years if they're doing it right, without any income coming in. And then, but like Brad, I think right now they have a user base of 500,000. I think within a year or two, they'll probably be up to 1-2 million users, which is perfectly great growth that they've paid for. And I think the next stage for Substack's evolution is they've gone out to what they see as the biggest names for online audiences. So they go to like Matty Iglesias for economics journalism. They go to, I don't know, Scotty Young for his image comic of Fairyland and that kind of thing, right? And so they've gotten those names with $100,000, $150,000 contracts or grants, rather. I think the next stage is you're going to start seeing more people with smaller audiences being offered 25, 50, 75,000. To Brad's point, I think they're going to try to appeal to a certain middle-sized audience at greater volume, but with less grant money. I can see them doing that, although that gets, you know, administratively more hard to do. So maybe they don't, but I could see them doing that. But now one last thing, Brad, that we haven't talked about, actually two last things. So one is, does this have a permanent impact on comic books, on the making, the creation, the selling of Marvel and DC or Image books in the next 2, 3, 5 years?
Impact, I'd say a little bit of an impact, but no more. If you take Substack and take it off the table and you wave a magic wand and say, okay, Substack never happened, everything that's going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years is going to happen anyway, right?
Oh, good point. That's a good way to look at it, yeah.
The Marvel and DC are on a very distinguishable downward slope, right? It's grinding to a halt. This traditional print publishing is going away. Okay. And that would have happened with or without Substack. Substack is now going to be a part of it, but even if you take Substack out, it's still going that same direction. So will it have an impact? That's debatable. Will it play a part? Absolutely. Absolutely. But it would have played out this way sooner or later anyway.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that's actually a really good way to look at it. I think, unfortunately, the alternate is also true, which is Certain artists like to think that they were the salvation of, doesn't matter what the title is, Green Lantern, right. Iron Man, Batman, whatever it is. The truth of it is, the reason why they have lasted 30, 40, 50, 60 years, some of these titles, is because the mythos of that specific world is what sells the comic. People just want to see Batman be angry about his parents being dead and he's going to punch people, right? People just want to see Tony Stark be slightly alcoholic and create a new machine. Like, that's, they know the story. It's a welcoming embrace. Well, I'm not focusing on his alcoholism. But what I'm getting at, though, is that they know the story. It's like a warm homecoming, you know, to read another Spider-Man. Yeah. It's not going to challenge you. You're going to understand that Peter Parker is just a kid trying to make it in the city. Right. And I'm just a neighborhood Spider-Man. Those stories are not, what I'm getting at is they're not creator driven in the sense that you and I and everybody who loves comics knows that there are certain runs that are great on X-Men because so-and-so wrote it or so-and-so drew this one. But the truth is the title will survive even with them gone. So I, like you, I think that won't make a difference to the trajectory that they're on already because of the slow death of comic book shops and the slow, painful price point of a floppy. So, yes, I agree with you on that point. So, okay, then the last thing, Brad, that I want to talk about is there's a couple of people on Substack, and it doesn't even matter what your political or philosophical inclinations are. There's one or two sort of grantees on Substack that any of us could point to and be like, that's a terrible human being. I don't like them. Right. They write terrible things, or they write hateful things, or they're really bad about the way they talk about such and such a group. And this happened with Patreon too, Brad. So I wanted to get your thoughts on, A, how does an artist navigate it when you are no longer just Brad Geiger in the world? Some people will associate you with a bigger group of which you don't have a control over what they say. And then also, how should Substack handle this with some of the hires that they've made?
Well, Substack, we've been following this for a while, and some of the people that they did large payouts, did some very charged stuff. I know a lot of people in the LGBTQ community were upset with it. There was some writers who were anti-trans and were writing some very, very very, very charged stuff. And of course, when you're part of that community, you take that very seriously, right?
Right.
And
as
so
you should,
they were pushing back on that. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means that every individual has to decide how they feel about that, whether you as a creator want to get involved with that. I've seen this in another way. In Patreon removed an awful lot of people that they saw what they were doing. They said, well, we think this is hate speech. We think this is something that we don't want to support. So they removed them. And I got a number of people come up to me and say, well, you know, I'm not going to support you on Patreon anymore. I said, I understand that. For me, it comes down to a decision where of all the things that I've already said, right? Where I said, listen, Patreon is the 800 pound gorilla. This is where the business is. This is where I have to be. But as an individual creator, I also respect that everybody has to make that decision for themselves. And my decision is my decision. Your decision is going to be your decision. Right. If you decide that you want to be part of this, then you make that decision and you go with it. And if you decide you don't, then you've got to decide not to. But, for me to sit here and tell you how you should think or how you should feel, I can't do that. All I can do is tell you how I made my decision. And if you want to use that to help inform yours, so be it. If you want to say Geiger's full of crap, you won't be the first.
Yeah. So a couple of the comic book artists that signed up immediately got hassled because people were saying in a way that's, it's always tricky to navigate this in an online space because it's so much more complicated because these people as individuals are some of the kindest comic writers that I know. And yet the accusation was, well, yeah, but now you're on this platform that has, and I don't even know who the writer is, but a transphobic writer that's incredibly vociferous and mean and hateful. And so these comic artists would say, okay, I'll keep the 100,000 from Substack, but I'm going to donate all my subscription money Mm-hmm. Which is a nice thing to do. But even that is a drop in the bucket compared to that $100,000. Because you and I both know The first year of subscriptions we've all just got done saying how little money that's going to be for that first year. Yeah. So, but what I'm getting at is, it's unfortunate. I hate this aspect of working online, is that anytime I do anything with any group, suddenly I'm answerable for the worst possible person on Kickstarter who I've never met, didn't even know existed. If I Kickstarter books and I'm like, yeah, but these guys over here doing hate speech. Thankfully, Kickstarter and Patreon, Brad, to everyone's happiness, has gotten much better about stopping hate speech on Patreon and on Kickstarter. Yeah. But it's a weird world to operate in where you're like, no, I'm just a nice cartoonist trying to kickstart my book. And someone would at least 5 or 6 or 7 years ago say, yeah, but Kickstarter also hosts hate speech. And you're like, well, geez, well, no, I don't want to. What I'm getting at is, thank God Kickstarter and Patreon stepped up to it. And I think Substack is going to have to step up to these considerations because I think with a little bit blinders on, they hired people for audiences without really knowing what they were going to write is what I think happened. And once they start to read, oh, like, geez, this is really some serious hate speech. We got to get rid of this person. I think Substack will wake up to that.
Well, you know these people as well as I do. You've sat down in some of the same meetings as I have. These people really don't read the text. They read the numbers, right?
Right. Right.
They don't read what this person has written. They read numbers like, you know, 100,000 followers on Instagram and, you know, 500,000 on Twitter. That's what they're reading. The follower numbers, the reach, the engagement, the spreadsheet stuff, as far as reading the sentences that went into paragraphs that went into some very hateful and hurtful commentary, that never gets read. The numbers that they're reading.
And I mean, thankfully, I only know 2 or 3 of the cartoonists that are comic makers who have been hired in this current wave with Substack grants. Yeah. And they're all wonderful human beings. So that's good. But here's the thing, though, is that one of the reasons why you'll see me, Dave Kellett, consistently make a choice of owning and controlling my own work is because I know this sounds simplistic and naive, but then I only have to answer for what I have to put out into the world. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Then if I put out something that's accidentally hurtful, then I apologize because it was my work.
Right.
I hate being put into a position where I try to be a nice and kind and good person to make the world better, as we've said, with my art. And then I have to answer for some dumb shit on Go Comics or some dumb shit on Comic Sherpa. And people are like, well, you're on Comic Sherpa or you're on Go Comics or you're on whatever it is. Well, how do you feel about this? I'm like, I don't know. I didn't even know they existed up until 2 seconds ago. And so that's why I have found a personal joy in just owning and controlling my own work, because then I'm answerable for what I put out into the world, which I find to be a much more pleasant way to go through a career. What, any last thoughts on that, Brad?
No, I agree with you 100%. I will say this, Substack is going to be very interesting to watch over the next several years. I don't think this is going to be the last time we talk about Substack. I think this is going to be something that there's going to be more to come. I think they've got probably a few more surprises up their sleeves, quite frankly.
Right.
And we're going to, I wouldn't, in other words, in another 18 months, I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see them unveil something, either a pivot or a new feature that that they're coming out with. I think we're going to see a lot from Substack over the next several months. So I think it's going to be fun to watch. At this point, my official recommendation, if anybody cares for it, is that that's exactly what you should be doing, watching. I don't know that participating is wise just yet, but definitely watch. And, you know, Dave and I will be watching it right there alongside of you.
Yeah, this will be an interesting 2 years or so for Substack. Yeah. I think, like Brad, I think $82 million in VC capital buys you a couple of surprises up your sleeve. And so the move towards podcasting, I think, is an interesting one. Because if you think about it, a newsletter is basically a fancied up RSS feed. And podcasts run on RSS feeds. So it's an interesting parallel to jump into. Oh, wait. Oh, a big correction from Brad is about to come in. Hold on. Look at that facial expression.
Not a correction. I just want you to what was that technology you just mentioned?
Oh, my God. Feed? No one wants to lord this over us more than Brad Geiger. Brad, it's RSS making a comeback.
What did the prognosticator say on one of his three predictions for the next phase of technology after social media? He said it was going to be run by an RSS engine.
No, listen, I will agree with you because I never disagreed with you that RSS wasn't a perfect technology. I loved RSS. Here's why RSS died. RSS died because the tech companies couldn't run the advertising money that they wanted to get out of it. So Google was like, well, to hell with this. Yahoo was like, well, to hell with this. But RSS was great from a user perspective, from a creator perspective. It was a great way to talk to one another. But it died because they couldn't extract an extra 15 cents of click money out of each RSS feed. You know what I mean? Whatever small money they thought they could get out of it, they couldn't get it.
And it's just, as we're wrapping up, as we're talking, I'm getting an email, monetize your podcast. People are really there's going to be a lot. And this is not Substack. This is a company I've never heard of before. But I'm telling you, a lot of these things like Substack and 100 others that I could mention, I think we're going to start to see these because I think other people have realized that we're in late stage social media as well. Yeah. A lot of these companies now are going to come out of the woodworks. There's going to be a lot of them now. A Substack, that's my final prediction, is just the tip of the iceberg. We're going to see 100 Substacks come out between now and the next 18 months. It's going to be an explosion. I guarantee it. This is not the end.
You might not be wrong about that, Brad. But here's the thing. It's an imperfect world. This is an imperfect decision. I think, frankly, the comics creators that are making this, Brad and I wish them well. We think it's going to be a harder road for them. We think than they think it's going to be. The next interesting date, remember this, the next interesting date after the day they sign that contract is 365 days plus one. So check in a year from now for all these creators that are announcing, because we think that that's going to be the telltale of whether Substack is sustainable for any of us, which we don't think is necessarily going to happen for the majority of these creators. So anyway, Brad, any final thoughts on Substack?
No final thoughts. It's going to be fun to watch. And speaking of fun to watch, it's been fun for our Patreon backers to watch us record this show live. Once again, we meet on Tuesdays at 11:30 Eastern time. And I can't tell you how much fun it is to have our Patreon backers along with us. They've got this show way before you did. They're getting first crack at all this choice, juicy information. And you can too, when you join us over on patreon.com/comiclab, you can sit in and participate in the live stream recording process. And when you do, make sure you stop by and say hello, because we're going to be thrilled to introduce you to everybody in the chat on your first day. And one of those things that those people in the chat are going to tell you is this. They're going to say, hey, you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
And then they're going to pull you aside as a friend, maybe a hand on the shoulder, and say, your hosts have been my friend, Brad Geiger. They're not going to say my friend. Your hosts have been Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And they may even say that the other person over there is named Dave Kellett, the co-director of the comics documentary Stripped and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And then, because they've memorized it after so many shows, they'll say the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
And then you know what they're going to say? They're going to say that if you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode.
And because they're business savvy, they'll be sure to remember to say, this show has been sponsored by the good folks at Wacom at WACOM.com, the makers of the Wacom One. And Comic Lab is made possible by your support on Patreon.com/Comic Lab. So we'll go ahead and say it like me running out of oxygen at the end of the show. Patreon.com/... Brad, are you there? Mother? Mother, are you there? Oh, I'm seeing a light. Brad, I'm seeing a light.
Walk towards the light, Dave.
Go, wait a minute. It's just my ring light around my camera. Brad, I'm going to be honest. I do think I'm getting lightheaded, though, now that I'm aware of this.
You know, Dave, they've got this thing on the door. It's called a doorknob. What you do is you grasp the doorknob, you turn it a little bit, pull that, and it's crack the door. Just crack the door. Let some air in. That's all you got to do.
Wait, slow down. This technology is very confusing. I'm very oxygen deprived. Take this from the top. Hold on.
Turn the doorknob.
How many pigs do I have to wrestle? Hold on. I need you to talk really slowly.
I'm learning too much about your psyche. Just turn the doorknob.